We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Darmstadt, Illinois. And I have at my right my faithful companion, Reverend Matthew Clark. Take it away, Matt.
Thanks for the intro. Boy, you never do that. It was great. We should have more of it. Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran Church in beautiful St. Louis Hills, South St. Louis City.
How much money do you get paid by the St. Louis Travelers Association?
Not
you're
enough.
You're always so enthusiastic about...
blocks from Ted Drews.
Just blocks from...
Yeah, Ted Drews. I don't know. I've never gotten anything from them either.
But in other words, I can come to church and go right over to Ted Drews and get some ice cream.
You bet. Well, not right now because they're closed. As we're recording this, they are closed for the season.
Is that right? When do they open up again? Because that question actually came up.
I think it's this week.
Is it this week?
I think it's a matter of days. We're hoping as a family because we just recently, our family had the flu. It just swept through our house.
Oh, I know. We had that same thing.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Started with our youngest with Anna, then Noah, our second youngest, our other child, and then my wife and I, and just swept through the house. It was terrible. But now, after the fact, we're attributing it to our systems, our bodies. We're used to a regular intake of Ted Drews frozen custard.
Right.
And they were in withdrawal. It wasn't the flu at all. It was just the lack of Ted Drews.
The lack of Ted Drews. And so I understand the St. Louis Health Department is going to start demanding that Ted Drews stay open 12 months a year because of that very reason.
I do not think it's a coincidence that the worst part of cold and flu season coincides with when Ted Drews is closed. Coincidence?
No,
I
don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think there can be a statistical proof found there. Matt, we have started talking about a little bit about Barnabas, Acts chapter 4, and I understand you want to continue that story today with Acts chapter 5 and some more details about what happens after the story of Barnabas. So where would you like
me to
pick this
up? That's right. Let's pick up with Acts chapter 4, again, that very last part. We'll review what we went over last time. And the reason we're doing this...
Now, there's no time for foolishness.
I just needed to make that note so that people knew that foolishness about Ted Drews is over.
Down to business. Open your Bibles if you're at home. If you're in the car, don't do that. Just listen up. We'll read the text for you. You know who you are. But this came about partly because this is something that came up in a Bible class that I'm leading at Ascension.
Yes, you're doing the book of Acts,
We are doing the book of Acts Tuesday morning.
And what time, if people wanted to come out there to Ascension, what time would they be there?
9:30.
Okay.
There'll be coffee and
No ice cream,
fellowship,
though.
No frozen custard this time of year. Sorry, okay. You're out of luck.
But normally.
Normally, though. No, bring your own. No, so the group would love to partake in that, I'm sure. But 9:30 at Ascension, they'll join us. That would be great. But we were going
You know, if you come to St. Paul's, we've got a pretty decent barbecue place you can go to. It ain't Ted Drews, but it's pretty decent barbecue.
Very good. Well,
Italian. I'm sorry, the Italian place is closed on Sundays, for lunch at least. So, anyway,
good Italian place, though. Good pizza.
It is a good pizza. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Wait a second. Hold on. Just a second.
I thought there was no time for foolishness.
All right, now. There's no time for foolishness.
All right. There we go.
Don't make me say it again.
And Jolly John means it this time. So one of the in our Bible study on Acts, getting back to that, one thing that really sparked some discussion, I thought, was this discussion here with Ananias and Sapphira, this coupless married couple, this husband and wife in the book of Acts, chapter 5. But before we get to them, we want to look at a description of the early church here, and also a description of one of the key people, it seems, within the early church. And here we really have a positive description, very positive, in Acts chapter 4, how about beginning with verse 34 and following?
There was not a needy person among them, for as many as were owners of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need. Thus Joseph, who was also called by the apostles Barnabas, so he had a nickname just like you and I have a nickname, which means son of encouragement, a Levite, a native of Cyprus, sold a field that belonged to him and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet.
Yeah, so here, there's this guy, Joseph is his real name, right? But he, like you point out, has a nickname, just like us, Youngblood and Jolly John, and his nickname is a very positive one. Part of the reason is because of what he's doing here, I think, partially. He's giving, this field, the proceeds, to the work of the early church. But the description of the early church is beautiful, I think, here. There was not a needy person among them. Because people sold what they owned and laid at the apostles' feet. It was distributed to those that they as they had need. Just, I think, a beautiful description of that sharing, of that community in that early church.
And isn't it a shame the church isn't like that today, Matt? What has happened to the church that we're not like this today?
I tell you what. Well, or is it? That's a good point.
That's the point.
Or is it? In many ways, I think it is. It's not this utopia, of course. It's not without fault. But well, as we see here, too,
that's right.
In
we get
just a few breaths.
Early church, yeah, it's
bet.
Got problems, too.
You
we'll
bet.
See that in
the,
a second,
the,
yeah.
The early church isn't without fault, either. But there are these different examples where it seems as though, boy, God is really working powerfully among his people, as he always does. But they give generously. I think of the Old Testament, when they are putting together the tabernacle and those furnishings, as God commands. And the people start to give. They give so much, in fact, that they have to turn them away and say, you've given enough. We've got plenty. It's taken care of. And here it seems to be similar in some ways that the people are giving so much in the early church of what they have that no one even has need. That's a beautiful description.
And see, the interesting thing is, Matt, I think the same thing is going on in the church today. I think what bothers us is we hear this story and we're assuming that people are selling everything they have and give it to the church, although I don't know that that's exactly what the book of Acts is saying here. It isn't saying necessarily, for example, that Barnabas sold all of his fields, is it? It's just saying that he did have one field. He did sell it. He did give that. He's probably got other fields there to take care of himself, take care of his family. The other thing that occurred to me too, Matt, is that the early church really lived in a thought that the world was going to come to end right away. There was this belief that, you know, Jesus Christ has come and that any moment he's going to return. In fact, it's a thing that the early church, the apostles, Paul, Peter, they have to kind of wrestle with because people are. And so that might have been part of the reason, too, because people thought, well, he's going to come any moment. We don't need any of these things. Whereas now we realize that the end can come at any time, could come today, but it might not come for another 1,000 years. No man knows the day or the hour. But as far as the generosity that's being expressed here, I think the same thing is going on in the church today. I know they tell me, like with Lutheran World Relief, wherever there's a typhoon or a hurricane or something where there's some kind of special need, the offerings that pour into Lutheran World Relief are just amazing. It would just, you can't believe how generous people are. And of course, one of the great things about those particular charities is most of that money then goes to the people who are actually in need. It's not being kept by some administrator or some bureaucratic staff. So that would be my contention. The same stuff is going on in the church today. We see people that are hungry and we feed them. It's what we do.
And why should we be surprised? Because it's the same Lord of the church today.
Yes, yeah.
And that's just behind this all. These early Christians aren't more holy or less sinful than Christians today. No, just as sinful as us, but also just as forgiving. Given as us through Jesus Christ, and it's the same Lord who's motivating this giving. And it's a beautiful description here.
And thank you. See, that's the thing. This isn't saying that the people in the early church were better than the people in the church today. It is to say that the Lord Jesus Christ, who is the author of all love, for we love as he first loved us, he was alive and well back then, and he's alive and well in the church as well. However, are there still problems in the church? Yes, there are.
Oh, no doubt.
And as we're going to see here in the next few verses, there were problems in the early church, too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it was this holy institution, and somehow we've become more corrupt as time has gone on. There's always been corruption and sin.
Yeah. And I love that sense of urgency, too. I think you're right. That urgency, Christ could return at any moment. I think in the early church, they had a keen awareness of that. The ascension. The disciples are standing there looking in the air, thinking Jesus is going to come back in a couple minutes. And then finally the angels have to say, no, get at it. But but this idea that the time is short, let's get the word out. Let's prepare others so that they too are fed and nourished, but also ready spiritually for the return of Christ. And how much more should that urgency be in the church today? Here we are 2,000 years later.
Right. Yeah.
His return's 2,000 years closer. And we should have that same sense of urgency, even more so perhaps, to get that good news of Jesus Christ out, to care for those in need, to be about that work of expanding and the kingdom, that reign of Christ here in the world.
And yet I'm thinking there is that tension in that as well, isn't there, Matt? Because on the one hand, there are the preachers out there that say exactly that, that on 2015, he's going to return. And so therefore, you better start doing what you need to do now. And again, and they might even point to this and say, sell all you have and give it to the church. In fact, that might be something I might preach this coming week. I never thought about that. But anyway, but no, see, that's to fall in the ditch on the other side, because the Bible clearly says no man knows the day or the hour. So we don't know when this is going to come. And yet, on the other hand, as you just pointed out, because we know he is going to come, we should take seriously what we do every day in terms of trying to do everything we can to love the neighbor and to get the gospel out.
And I think this idea too that those in the early church and us today too, as they give and as we give, we do so as stewards.
Ah, yes.
God gives us these gifts, and He's the giver, whether we realize it or not. And we're stewards. We're those who hold those gifts in trust, who manage those gifts, if you will, and use them to His honor, to His glory, and service to Him. And there's multiple ways of doing that too. Here's Barnabas, who gives this field. You know, thanks be to God, he's being a good steward. But is giving in the offering plate on Sunday morning the only way we're a good steward? And we'd say no. There's other ways to use those resources and money in a God-pleasing way. And we think of our vocations in life as a father, as a parent, as a mother. We can use those gifts to care for our children, to care for our families. Those are God-pleasing ways to use those gifts too.
And that's important for us to remember, because I think there is a tendency, Matt, for us to want to divide our life up and our money up into, well, here's our religious pile, here's the 10%. Oh, God, wouldn't that be nice if people actually did give a tithe? But anyway, yeah, we've got a percentage of what we're given. That goes to the Lord's work. And then everything else is ours to do with as we please. But actually, the concept of a steward is that we don't own anything. That it's not part of ours and part of God's. That's not what a steward is. Everything the steward has belongs to someone else, belongs to the Lord. And therefore, everything we do, we ought to be thinking in terms of the work of God. But see, here's the thing. As you pointed out, the work of God is not just giving to church. Certainly, that is a good thing to do, especially in support and love of your pastor and for the sending out of missionaries and what have you. But when we take care of our family, this is a godly work. As you said, that's part of our responsibility as being a father or mother or a husband or a wife, taking care of our spouses and even taking care of ourselves. Again, that's not a sinful thing to do. That's not a secular thing to do. But that is a religious thing to do as well. In fact, that's what we need to do with all of our money. We need to use them as people who know these are gifts of God and they are used to love our neighbor. And our neighbors include our families and our friends and ourselves.
You bet. Yeah, so don't leave our families, our children destitute. No, that's not what God wants us to do to really please Him. No, but to use those resources in trust that He's given to us in trust as His stewards to manage it in a God-pleasing way. All right. So then we have this example of Barnabas doing that. This guy,
beautiful example.
Joseph, who the apostles nickname him Barnabas, son of encouragement. And so we see Barnabas come up later in the book of Acts. He's Paul's travel companion and someone who the Lord works through here in the early church.
The thought just occurred to me, like you said, he is known because he's the guy that goes with Paul as they travel all over the world bringing the gospel to the Gentiles. And it just occurred to me, maybe he doesn't have a family. Maybe he doesn't have children. Maybe he doesn't have a wife. And that's why he did have the freedom to sell his field and give it to the church. And that's why he had the freedom then to go and travel with Paul when Paul went on his missionary journeys, because he didn't have those attachments. What we said before, stewardship involves any number of things, and it's different with every situation, every person, depending upon what responsibilities God has given them.
You bet.
We talked about this with the disciples, that Peter was not asked to leave. right? Peter basically does his ministry for his whole life right here in the Jerusalem area because Peter did have a wife, and I'm thinking he probably did have a family as well. So, well, anyway, go ahead. Where do you want to go from here, Matt?
All right. Well, all this is just setting the table, really, for what we're about to talk about next.
Yeah.
Here's Barnabas, the description of the early church, and Barnabas giving this field, laying it at the disciples' feet, the apostles' feet. And here, the next account stands in stark contrast to what Barnabas does and the reason for which Barnabas does it.
Yeah.
So
maybe we need to talk about that. Why did Barnabas do this?
Well, I would say, you know, not just why did Barnabas do this, but why did the whole early church
yes.
do this?
Yeah.
Why were they, as Acts describes, giving so much that no person had any need among them? What was their motivation? And really motivated, I think, by the same thing we're motivated by today as we give, in thankfulness and joy and gratitude for all the Lord's done for us. In response to, at the core, the gospel message itself, that God, out of love for us, gave all he had, his only begotten son, for us. And now in grateful response, not under compulsion, we give to those in need. And when we see that need, like you brought up, disasters or other things, we meet those needs. We think of Jesus' words in Matthew 25. You've brought this up before, to feed those who are hungry, to clothe those who are naked, to visit those who are in prison. That's what we're called to do, and we do that in response and in faith. And I think that's the early church's motivation, and Barnabas, the son of encourage's motivation as well.
And that's the same motivation for the church today.
You bet.
See, because we like to play this game of contrasting what we think to be this pure, holy early church and how the later church has gotten more and more corrupted. But we need to remember, no, the church has one Lord, one Master, and everything the church does that is good and God-pleasing flows from the work of that same one Lord and Master. So the Lord loves us, and as he's loved us, we love one another. So what was going on here in the early church, and I do believe is going on in the church today, although, again, as we're going to see, there is also the problem of sin. That is always ongoing in the church, and we shouldn't be surprised when we see these things happen, even today, where we see people doing things that they probably shouldn't be doing, and they still call themselves Christians.
You bet.
Yeah.
So that should be our motivation, right? But it's not always our motivation. And here's a prime example. So why don't we pick up with this account of Ananias and his wife Sapphira, and we're in Acts chapter 5, beginning with verse 1.
But a man named Ananias, with his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property, and with his wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. You want me to go on, or you want to talk about it?
No, we can pause there, and I just want to make note that so far sounds pretty good, huh? So he sold this piece of property, same as Barnabas, right? His wife knows about it too, we know. And then he lays it at the apostles' feet, pretty much the same as Barnabas for the most part.
Except there's something about a part of it.
Well, he gives
part of it.
He gives part of it. But what we're about to hear now, and really what we've already heard, maybe we know it, don't know it though, is what we've just heard about is the first sin recorded in the early church. Isn't that interesting? The book of Acts.
So we got all the way to chapter 5.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That isn't bad at all, yeah.
Now, that's not to say people weren't sinning. It is not to say the early church was perfect. But so far, what's been recorded for us is the account of Pentecost and the Holy Spirit's work, the generosity of the early church. But here, no, it's not perfect, though. We're still sinners. And here is the first recorded sin.
Which I think makes perfect sense. So we've got this beginning of the book of Acts, and we have the Spirit coming and filling the apostles and cutting men to the heart and people being baptized and joining together in the fellowship of the apostles. And it's like everything's holy and perfect. And then the author comes and reminds us, no, it's still the same sinful people that it always was, because Jesus Christ said he came to this earth to save sinners. That's who he's come to save. So same way in the early church.
Yeah. And the church is full of sinners.
Full of sinners. What did you want to talk anything about the names here, though? Is there any significance
to the
names?
Sure, that's kind of interesting. So we're talking names today. So you got Barnabas, son of encouragement.
Son of encouragement.
So Ananias and Sapphira, their names have meanings too.
John, God's gracious gift. That's
well,
my name.
Well, yes, so you know the meaning of your name.
Yes,
my name, Matthew, means similar to yours, means gift of God.
So what's the deal? Matthew, John, are they both mean God's gracious, or God's gift? What?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure our wives would agree that that's always the case. So obviously today, names may not always describe a person accurately.
Yes, obviously. Thank you, Matt.
But in Bible times, Bible days, here in the New Testament, and especially in the Old Testament, names are pretty significant. You know, certainly with Jesus' names.
Oh, yes.
But then
save
also,
his people from
their
sins.
Yeah, boy. But also with others' names as well, they can be pretty telling. They're, the meaning of the names not only describes who they are, but some cases what they do. With Ananias and Sapphira, not so much. So the name Ananias means the Lord is gracious.
Okay. And so kind of like our
names. So that's a good name. Yeah. Very nice. And Sapphira means beautiful. Yeah, that's a good name too. Yeah. Good meaning too. But as we see, they really don't live up to the meaning of their names. And we'll see that as the account here goes on.
Do you want me to continue then?
Well, yeah, go right ahead.
All right. So we have them laying it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back for yourself part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. When Ananias heard these words, he fell down and breathed his last, and great fear came upon all who heard it. The young man rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. Oh, wow.
Yikes. So Ananias sells this field, gives part of the proceeds, lays it at the proceeds to the church, lays it at the disciples' feet, and you know, Peter gets upset, it seems, questions him, and the guy drops dead.
Yes.
So we have some things to wrestle with here. The first thing to wrestle with, I think, is, well, what was his sin?
What okay. was the
we
sin?
Said it's the first sin of the early church. What exactly is this sin? What did Ananias do wrong here? Or is it just a matter of stewardship, or is it something more? And I think the second question is...
Here's your stewardship sermon. Hey, you guys better start giving more money, or we're going to strike you down dead. No, I think you're right. That's probably not the problem here, that he just wasn't a real good steward.
No. But on the surface, boy, it seems sure looks like it. And then I think the second question we have to wrestle with here is, why does the guy drop dead? That seems a little severe, don't you think?
That does seem kind of...
Sheesh.
Want to make me think twice the next time I put money in the offering plate.
Give till it hurts, but this is ridiculous.
Right.
Boy.
Oh.
So those are some things we need to wrestle with. So I think maybe we can start eliminating things with the time we have left here.
Okay.
So he sells the property. Was that wrong of him to do?
Nope.
Well,
obviously
no, that's not,
not
the sin.
You can sell your property.
Peter
sure.
points out it was his property and his property to do what he wants with it. So his wife knew about it. Was that wrong?
No.
Oh, no.
Well,
yeah,
if you're going to do something like this, you should consult your spouse. This is a good thing to talk to your wife about it.
Now, he kept part of it for himself. Was that wrong?
No. Yeah, that's what it is. I think that's what it is, that he kept part of himself. He should have given the whole thing to the church. When you sell stuff, you ought to give everything to the church. Is that? No. No.
No, see, but I think on the surface, a lot of people, that's it. You got to give it your all. But
that's
no,
I think you're right, Matt. No, that's right. You're not giving 100%, and that's what makes it a sin.
Yeah, and that's not the case here, and I think that's so important to point out. And Peter points it out. He says, while it was unsold, it was yours to do what you want. When it was sold, it was at your disposal. So that's not even the sin.
Okay, Matt, so I'm going to make a suggestion here. Because in just 1 second, I'm going to begin to play the closing music.
Oh, that's the best part of the show.
So, yeah, so maybe I should just shut up. Is that what you're saying? No, here's what I suggest. When we come back, let's talk about what the sin is.
Perfect. Good.
Okay.
Oh, that's
a teaser. And what was it? Why it is that he would be struck down dead immediately.
And why aren't we struck down dead? Why are John and Matt sitting here still yakking away?
Because I've been given a portion a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So some big questions. But we'll answer them next week on Wrestling with the Basics.